Although the new atheism represented by people like Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, and others is very popular on the lay level, in fact, this movement is intellectually weak. It doesn't have a lot of scholarly muscle. And that this is a popular cultural phenomenon that is really quite out of sync with the direction that scholarship is moving in.
This is Reasonable Faith, Conversations with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and whether you're listening on radio or podcast, we'd like to welcome you to Reasonable Faith. We think you'll find the topics we discuss on this show to be fascinating and enriching, wherever you are on your personal journey. William Lane Craig is a noted philosopher, scholar, theologian, and speaker, and on Reasonable Faith, he addresses the big questions of life. Now, while you're listening, let me remind you of the terrific resources available at reasonablefaith.org. There you'll find Dr. Craig's articles and books, audio and video of Dr. Craig's debates and speeches at universities all over the world, and a section featuring answers to the questions that you send to us. You'll also find past podcasts, a discussion forum, and audio from Dr. Craig's Defenders class. All this and more at reasonablefaith.org. Check it out today.
Christianity Today is a widely read publication, Dr. Craig. It's got a big circulation, magazine format. It's been around for a long time, and you have a cover article in this, cover story. How did this come about, and what's it all about?
Well, you're right, Kevin. Christianity Today is really the premier Christian magazine today, and it is the voice of evangelical Christianity today. I was contacted by Stan Guthrie at Christianity Today in late May, asking me to do an article for them on the renaissance of arguments for the existence of God in our day and age. And he said, it's high time we had something from you in this magazine. We've never featured anything by you before, and it's overdue. And I said, well, thank you very much. I'd love to do such an article. And so I wrote this article on the Renaissance in Christian philosophy and arguments for the existence of God. And he asked me to also share a little bit about how this is relevant to our postmodern culture today and why this is important and so forth. So I included this in the article, sent it in, and they liked it so much. They said, we want to use this as our cover story for the month of July. And so I was just thrilled that they would be running a story on their cover that features the work of Christian philosophers in our day and age to defend God's existence.
By the way, you mentioned postmodernism, and we'll explain that to anybody who's not aware of that term here in just a moment and what that's all about.
Sure.
At the same time, you address the so-called new atheism,
yes,
which we address in other resources on reasonablefaith.org. How do you address this movement?
Well, in the article, what I say is that although the new atheism represented by people like Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, and others is very popular on the lay level, that in fact this movement is intellectually weak. It doesn't have a lot of scholarly muscle, and that this is a popular cultural phenomenon that is really quite out of sync with the direction that scholarship is moving in. And that, in fact, if you look at the last 40 years in philosophy, that there has been a renaissance of Christian philosophy in our day, of belief in the existence of God, and of arguments for God's existence among contemporary philosophers. So these so-called new atheists are really very ignorant of what is going on in academic circles with respect to these questions. This reflects a kind of internet infidel, skeptical inquirer, popular level kind of atheism.
Yeah. What's going on in philosophy, in professional philosophy, in academia, is actually a resurgence,
yes,
of evidence for God, arguments for God, and so on. And you're saying that this new atheism, more of a pop phenomenon, perhaps...
Exactly.
Unaware of these new arguments, or unaware of the resurgence of it?
Well, I think he clearly is unaware of it, because when you read the writings of people like Dawkins and Harris and others, you don't find them interacting with these figures in their writings. It's clear that they're ignorant of them because they are not interacting with the work of people like William Alston, Robert Adams, Alexander Proust, Alvin Plantinga, and others. So it's clear from their own writings that they are just out of touch with what's going on in high-level scholarship in philosophy.
Seems to be an internet phenomenon.
Almost, although I mean Dawkins' book was published and is extremely popular. It was a bestseller. So
there have been about four atheist books that have been surprisingly bestsellers.
Yes.
A lot of people at this point, I think, will hear this and perhaps read the article and use just kind of an appeal to authority, a lot of Christians, and saying to their atheist friends or to skeptics and in their evangelistic efforts, well, there's been a resurgence, actually, in philosophy on arguments for God, and it's very reasonable to believe in God and from a philosophical and scientific standpoint and so on. But you actually delve into some of the arguments here,
yes,
as well?
Yes, briefly. I mean, obviously, in a popular magazine article, you can only give a real sketch of it. And boy, I had to dumb it down. I mean, I had to really work with the editors at CT to dumb down some of this material to make it accessible to lay people. But they did at least allow me to put in a bibliography where folks who want to go deeper can read some scholarly level works.
It's not that lay people are dumb. It's that some of it requires some training.
Oh, exactly, Kevin. And I hope nobody thought that I meant that when I said dumbed down. It would be like me trying to read a professional medical journal.
Yeah,
I don't know the medical terminology and so forth to read the New England Journal of Medicine or something of that sort. And it's similar with professional philosophy. But what that means is that when you write an article for popular consumption, and this is true in science as well as in philosophy, you inevitably have to compromise on the precision of what you're saying and say things that you would really want to qualify a lot. And so I have to do that in the article. But to address your point more directly, I think an appeal to authority, such as you mentioned, is quite legitimate. I don't think that that is a fallacy at all if you're appealing to bona fide authorities. When an appeal to authority is fallacious would be, for example, when a Hollywood starlet comes on a commercial and recommends that you buy some new automobile or something. That's a fallacious appeal to authority. But when, say, a Francis Collins says something about the human genome, well, then that is a legitimate basis.
Because he's an expert in the field.
He's an expert.
And it's quite proper to quote an expert in the field.
Exactly. He knows more about it than you do, so you go on the basis of his authoritative testimony. So if an atheist comes to the average Christian and says, you Christians, you're all idiots, and nobody believes in this stuff who has any intelligence, it's quite appropriate to respond, well, what about Richard Swinburne at Oxford University? What about Alvin Plantinga at the University of Notre Dame? What about William Alston at Syracuse University? Do you think these people are intellectual nincompoops?
These are respected, highly qualified philosophers.
At some of our most prestigious universities. So that kind of appeal to authority is quite legitimate.
I think what I'm trying to say is we as believers not only need to know about these philosophers and this resurgence, but we also need to have a basic grasp on these arguments.
I
think that's what I'm trying to say.
I agree absolutely. The next follow-up question that the unbeliever would have would be, well, then what are?
Yeah. Well, give me one. Yeah,
yeah, give
For
me
example.
One of these arguments.
And well, so, I don't know. Go read the book. There's a paper somewhere.
Right, right. And that's awkward. Whereas, in fact, as I show in the CT article, these arguments are typically composed of only three or four premises, three or four sentences, and they're easy to memorize and to share with a non-believer. So I would encourage people to memorize these arguments and have them tucked away and ready to share if somebody asks.
Now let's get into postmodernism, because you address that. Postmodernism, I find kind of difficult to define sometimes. You want to give it a go?
Yes, it is difficult. What it basically says is that the whole project of what is called modernism or modernity, which began in the Enlightenment, which said that reason and logic is able to give us the truth about reality. The claim is that has now collapsed, and that instead we find that there is no absolute truth, there is no overarching, as they say, meta-narrative about the way the world is. Everybody has his own narrative. The world for me is different than the world for you.
Seems to be relativistic.
It is. It's all things are relativistic and pluralistic. There isn't any way the world really is. It fragments. It falls apart, and every person has his own reality.
Postmodernism seems to say that it's arrogant to claim that you know some truth.
That's right as well. The person who does think that there is objective truth is regarded as arrogant and maybe even immoral and so forth.
How is this, I can kind of see it, but how is this an attack in some ways on Christianity, on the Christian faith?
Well, the Christian faith claims that there is a privileged perspective on reality, namely God, God's perspective. God stands, as it were, at the peak of a pyramid of diverse perspectives on the world, and in the unity of his intellect, he grasps the world as it is. And therefore, there is a truth and objective reality to the world that is known to God. And that is anathema to these radical postmodernists. There cannot be a peak to the pyramid at which it all comes together in an objective way the world is. Rather, there just has to be this disparate, scattered collection of perspectives with no overarching perspective that pulls it all together. And so they reject Christianity.
The postmodern view seems to downplay his history as well, the historical method. You can't know history.
That's correct, Kevin. And there have been attempts to do postmodern historiography, and it leads to historical relativism. This is one of the things that I deal with in the third edition of Reasonable Faith. I talk about postmodern historiography and how this would challenge the objectivity of history and hence our claim to know anything about the historical Jesus. So it does have an impact upon those sorts of things.
We know from history that you can't know history.
Well, that's the self-contradiction, you see, of postmodernism. It's self-defeating, and for that reason,
there is no truth.
Yes, it's self-defeating. And for that reason, postmodernism, contrary to popular belief, has not made great inroads into philosophy or into history or into science, because these people understand there are objective canons of rationality and truth, and there is an objective reality out there. So that where postmodernism is most influential tends to be in departments of literature and English and religious studies, but not in philosophy and history and the natural sciences.
Now, Bill, wait a minute. We're totally led to believe that we're totally postmodern, and postmodernism is the reigning paradigm now, and churches are starting to embrace it and have embraced it. And so are you saying that that's not really the case?
That is what I'm saying. Yes, it isn't the case. In fact, I'm very proud, frankly, of the way philosophy, my own discipline, has rejected postmodernism, at least in the Anglo-American world. It has not prevailed. And in history, it's largely become passé. These few postmodernist historiographers are now largely rejected, and history and the study of history has gone on and gotten past them, similarly in science as well. So it's quite a misconception, I think, perpetrated in our churches by youth ministers that we live in a postmodern culture and that postmodernity is this sort of new reigning paradigm of our age. That's simply false.
Very touchy-feely, it seems. It's how does this make you feel, and how does this relate to you as a community? And it uses phrases like that. Actually, it's rather fuzzy thinking.
That's the inevitable byproduct, I think, of downplaying the importance of truth and the objectivity of truth. Because once that is downplayed or gone, then what's left is various communities that have their own truth, their kind of shared narrative. And since rationality and truth are not so important, logic is downplayed, and therefore feeling and emotive expressions become more important.
Well, do you think that people are saying that they're postmodern, but they're still living as modernists, you know, perhaps?
Well, I think that what has in fact happened is that among certain Christian groups, it's become faddish or fashionable to say you're postmodern, but they're really not. It's just lip service to postmodernity. In fact, I think that our culture remains deeply modernist. Our culture is shaped by the Enlightenment and by modernity, and we live in a cultural milieu which is deeply, deeply modernist.
Well, that's good news for apologetics, perhaps.
It is, because ministry. It means that we can appeal to rational argument and evidence. When you talk to folks, what you find is that they are not relativistic or pluralistic when it comes to matters of science, engineering, or technology. What they're relativistic about is religion and ethics. But you see, that's not postmodernity. That's modernism. That's just old line verificationism, which says that if you can't verify something by the five senses, then it's just a matter of your personal opinion and your emotive expressions. So that we are living in a culture that I think is deeply, deeply modernist at its core. It accepts the scientific naturalistic view of the way the world is, and it treats religion and ethics as just expressions of emotions and personal taste.
Bill, you realize people are going to throw eggs at your house for writing this.
Well, I think a lot of youth ministers might. That's true. Because if I'm right, they are guilty of a colossal misdiagnosis of our cultural situation today. They are thinking that we live in a postmodern culture, and therefore we need to minister to people as postmoderns, when in fact I think that is utterly mistaken, Kevin. We live in a culture which is deeply modernist, and we need to minister to people as modernists.
I don't see the Apostle Paul as being any way postmodern. He seems to be very...
I would call Paul a premodernist. And if people were asking me, what are you? I would say I'm premodern.
Would you?
Yes, that's what Thomas Oden, the theologian from Duke University, says when people ask him. He says, I'm not a modernist. I'm not a rationalist who thinks that scientism is the way to get at truth. He says, I'm premodern. That is to say, I believe in the standards of rationality and logic and evidence, but I also believe that there is a God who, through his Holy Spirit, ministers to my heart and assures me that he exists and I'm his child. And so he basically says we need to get back to the views of the church fathers like Augustine and Anselm and Aquinas and these pre-moderns. The postmodernists are correct in criticizing modernism and this sort of verificationism. Only what can be known through the five senses is meaningful. But where they err is that they don't offer us a good alternative. Instead, they offer us this pluralism and relativism, which is incompatible with Christianity. What we need to do is get beyond the Enlightenment by going back to the church fathers and a truly biblical worldview.
Seems to be a two-prong approach in this article then, unless there's a third prong, and that would be the resurgence of arguments for God's existence and respect for those arguments in professional philosophy and the academy, the effect of postmodernism and the analysis that you just gave of it. Are those the two aspects that you're dealing with here in this article?
Well, the way I would put it is this, is there are the arguments for God's existence that are enjoying a renaissance today. And then what I try to show is why this is practically important. And the reason that it's practically important is because we still live in a modernist culture which values reason and logic. And therefore, as Christians, we definitely need to be able to commend our faith to unbelievers as a rational faith that is grounded in logic and evidence, and therefore can be commended to thinking men and women today.
Congratulations on getting a cover story on a well-read publication, Christianity Today, July 2008.
Praise the Lord.
And perhaps, Bill, this may offer a very much needed corrective in a whole lot of arenas today.
That's the hope.
thank you, Dr. Craig, for spending some time with us, and thank you, the listener, for being here today. This podcast is available at reasonablefaith.org, as well as a wealth of audio, video, and written materials from William Lane Craig. People all over the world have benefited from the insights of Dr. Craig, and we invite you to browse our resources at reasonablefaith.org. And when you give to Reasonable Faith or purchase our resources, you help us expand into more media and speaking events, taking Christ to a world of big questions. So be sure and visit us at reasonablefaith.org. I'm Kevin Harris. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with William Lane Craig.